Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jeanelle Theory. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning and welcome. Our guest today, Carol McLean, is the award-winning author of four novels. Carol writes novels about the redemption of the unredeemable. Even her most serious works are laced with humor. She is a consummate encourager, and no matter what your faith might look like, you will find compassion, humor, and wisdom in her complexly layered but ultimately readable work. She has served on the Board of Connections to Recovery, an organization dedicated to keeping addicts sober. She's mentored recovering addicts and at one time had been a foster mother. In addition to these accomplishments, Carol is a skilled stained glass artist and a budding potter. Good morning, Carol. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you.
Hi, Carol. We're very happy to have you, and we definitely want to talk about your writing. But first, we'd like to address some of your other interests. Tell us about your work with stained glass. How did you become involved with this particular artistic expression?
I always loved stained glass. As a child, I was raised Catholic, and I think most of my time during Mass was spent studying the scripture in the glass and the light glistening through it. As an adult then, one real bitterly cold winter when I lived in upstate New York, I was really beset by a bad case of cabin fever. And in our local newspaper, I saw that an artist was offering stained glass classes. So I had to get out of the house. I braved the sub-zero temperatures, went to the class, and after that, I guess I became an addict of my own. I love everything about glass. I love the texture of it, the play of light through it, the color. When I go to museums or shops, I drive everyone crazy because I linger over the glass. And after a day of writing, that's where I head down to my stained glass shop.
Is there any particular type of thing that you do? And I ask because I have a relative who does stained glass lampshades. They're absolutely breathtaking, and they're incredibly detailed. They just the time involved is so impressive to me. Is there anything in particular you like to do with the stained glass? Do you create gifts of any sort?
Oh, I do create gifts. I give as much away as I sell. I'm most interested in the panels, and I envy your friend with the lampshades. I took a class once. I attempted to make it. It is sitting in a cabinet, the pieces, and the glass I bought for the pattern is sitting in a cabinet awaiting the day when I'm brave enough to attempt to finish it again. So I like panels. I like to do complex things if it's too easy. If there's too great of a chance that it's going to be perfect and good. So I do something really complex so it could come out misshapen and wonky. So
neat. Yeah. Carol, that's what makes it unique, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Carol, I attended the Catholic Church for several years, and at our Catholic Church here in town, our stained glass windows are the Stations of the Cross. And I don't know if that's true of all Catholic churches, but anyway, this one. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it is just such breathtaking, so breathtaking to see the way that those events are depicted in glass. It is just amazing. So I can certainly understand your fascination with that art form.
Yeah. My husband was a Methodist minister, and one of his churches had the most glorious pieces of stained glass. And yeah, I spent as much time studying those as listening to my husband. So they are beautiful. The colors are vibrant and just the scriptures found in it. And yeah, They take me to another world.
For sure. Yes. Well, you also have an interest in pottery. Do you see a way that these two art forms reflect God's glory?
Yes. God said in Genesis 2:7, let us make man in our image. And I always saw that as really making us like him, like co-creators. If you think about the sons of Adam, each of them had a gift. It was music and farming and ironwork and all of those. And when God created man, he created him from the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils, and he became a living being. And God created from the dirt as both a glass artist and a potter. Essentially, my materials come from the dirt. Glass is made from sand, and clay, of course, is made from dirt. And so it's kind of neat to take those things and kind of like God, bring something beautiful into creation. Although with my pottery, it may not be quite so beautiful, but yeah. At the last craft show, people really loved the pottery. I was rather surprised, but they did like it. And yeah, and my glass. I love the glass the most.
It sounds like you're very humble. What types of pottery do you sell? What types of items?
It's all hand-built. So it's whatever I'm feeling at the moment. I've made birdhouses, vases, candle holders, dishes, you know, little sculptures, stylized cats and angels and... Yeah.
Wow. That's quite the variety.
Whatever strikes my fancy. I've got several Pinterest boards, more than several Pinterest boards. And so when I go into the studio, I belong to a local arts group. It's the Appalachian Arts and Crafts Center. So when I go in there, I take out my phone, find something that intrigues me, and then try to recreate it.
Amazing. Wow. Carol, do you happen to sell any of this stuff online?
Not online. No, I haven't gotten into that. Okay. Only recently have I shipped my glass. I was always a little leery of that.
Oh, yeah.
And that gets pretty expensive. So we do it locally. We go this weekend, tomorrow. It would be last Saturday once this airs. We're going to Ware's Valley Ranch. It's a home for kids who've been in trouble. And they have an annual craft sale. And so we're going to brave the rain and the wind and the storms and sell down there tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, I hope you get some nice weather. It doesn't sound like a pleasant day, but sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get lucky. It's undercover. It's under a gazebo, a pavilion kind of thing. But it is open on the sides. And, well, if the whole thing is a bust, our entrance fee will go to a worthy cause, because this group does help a lot of children who just haven't had help before.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
So, Carol, you're obviously a fan of animals, and as the owner, you're the owner of some kittens and a Springer Spaniel, but tell us about the latest addition to your family, your Pastel of Nigerian dwarf goats. How do they differ from other goats?
Well, I actually now only have one Nigerian goat. The other one is a Savannah goat. A Nigerian goat is smaller. It's about 2 feet tall. Weighs up to 70 pounds, so it's a smaller goat. When I was a younger person, I had Nubian goats, and those are up over 100 pounds, and, you know, maybe, I'm going to take a guess, 3 feet tall, and so they're much bigger goats. So Nigerian goats work better on a small piece of property. They're easier to handle. they're cute. They're very good milk producers. They do have a high butterfat content. They're very good mothers. So, you know, those are the Nigerian. The woman we bought the goats from happened to have had another goat born about a month before the littlest one. And it's a Savannah goat, which I had never heard of before. And she's pure white. She's an African goat. And they were prized for their white coloring. And the white is dominant, which surprised me because white is usually, my knowledge of genetics, recessive. So they're prized for coloring. And I'm thinking probably for sacrifices, either Islamic or whatever, sacrifices they want white. And she is just the sassiest bully you'd ever met and just really sweet. And she'll get to be about 100 pounds. She's half Savannah, half pygmy. Pygmy's a little shorter than a Nigerian. And so she won't be a full-grown 120-pound goat, but she'll be, you know, bigger than the other one. And so wanting a pair and a name that, because they're herd animals, it's best to have at least two. I named them Peanut, and Butter was too short, so it's Peanut and Buttercup. And Buttercup.
Oh, nice. I was going to ask you, because it sounds like they're working animals, but I wondered if you named them.
Yes, we do. They're as much pets as working animals. I will breed them this fall and then start milking them. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Going back to my hippie roots, I have a friend who will trade, you know, organic goat milk for their organic eggs, and yeah. Be ready for Armageddon, maybe.
I haven't had a lot of experience with goats, but my granddaughter raised two for 4-H a few years ago, and one of them didn't make weight, so could not be entered in the family. And I know she gave it to her aunt, and oh my goodness, her aunt just loved that goat. It was just the coolest pet.
Oh, they are so much fun. They do these little backflips and run all over, and we've bottle-fed them, and they think we're their parents. And, yeah. And if I want to call the Savannah goat, which is Buttercup, she is a loud and has the most obnoxious cry, and it sounds like ma, but I'm not on the radio going to imitate it. But if I want her to come to me, I just give her that awful cry, and she thinks I'm a goat calling to her, and she eventually comes.
That is fantastic. I love it.
Well, I can't remember what name that her aunt gave that goat, but it was the cutest name.
No, they have so much personality. Although I see why God is separating the sheep from the goats. In real life, goats are lots of fun, but they certainly have a mind of their own, and they're going to do what they want to do, not sheep quietly following.
Mm-hmm. They named him Waddles.
Waddles, that's perfect. Because sometimes the goats do have, oh, like a little skin hanging down, you know,
yes,
almost like a turkey, yeah, and they're called Waddles. Yeah, so that would be a perfect name for a goat. Yeah.
Yes. So you had mentioned, I believe I got this information from your bio that you sent, Carol, and you had said that you were going to be getting a passel of goats. How many is a passel?
Well, two. It turns out to be two. My husband promised me goats for a long time, and he finally, I went and did yoga with goats down at the Museum of Appalachia, and I came home so excited. He asked me if I wanted, well, he promised me chickens for a long time, and also then goats. When we moved here, we were going to get them. So he asked me when I came back from yoga with goats, do you really want chickens? And I said, no, because my friends have chickens and we're buying the eggs from them. without any of the hassle of having a chicken. So I said, I'm okay with it. And so I think he was hoping for the same answer. About half an hour later, he said, do you want goats? And I said, yeah. And the rest is history. And I think he loves them almost as much as I do.
Oh, okay. Did I misunderstand what you just said? Did you say you were doing yoga with goats?
Yes, yoga with goats.
Oh, my goodness. Do tell.
Okay.
Well, and I was going to ask, too, are you going to offer? Are you going to offer goat yoga when you get the babies? Because that could be a lot of fun.
I'm not a yoga instructor. I'm not a yoga instructor. Not by a far stretch. But I do like yoga. And I really haven't found a place around here. And then COVID hit. And so that, you know, doing yoga online, I tried that. That didn't really work. But the museum offered, in August, it offers yoga with goats. Their goats are born early August, I believe. And so they offer yoga with goats through a yoga studio. So the Museum of Appalachia is an extension of the Smithsonian. And it just, you know, shows life in this area. And so they have a great big field by a cantilevered barn, and they brought out, this was a passel of goats. It had to be two dozen kids that were about 2 to 3 weeks old. And so, you know, after we had already started the process, then the goats just went loose. And so then, of course, everybody was grabbing for the goats. And I did have one, you know, climb on my back, and I managed to do one of the poses with the goat on my back. When I got my own goats, Buttercup, the bigger one, loved to crawl on my back. She was always on my back. So, it's a lot of fun to have yoga with goats.
I guess so. I'm doing chair yoga on Zoom right now, and it's working out pretty good for me, actually.
Oh, good.
So when you said yoga, I thought, oh, wow, got to pursue this.
Yeah.
See what it's all about.
It's fun. It's really fun.
So, Carol, tell us about Connections to Recovery, where you've served as a board member. What is their mission?
Okay, Connections to Recovery is an organization dedicated to helping addicts find the resources they need for sobriety. So many of the services are to get people sober, either through just therapy, sometimes other drugs, you know, like Suboxone or methadone or whatever. Our church for many years had a women's residential home, which is now changed hands a couple of times and is Bridges to Recovery. But once people graduated from these programs, there was nothing for them. They could go to a place like Celebrate Recovery or Narcotics Anonymous. But what do you do if you can't go home to your family because your family are a bunch of addicts, or you can't go back to where your friends are? We worked some in the jail with a couple of guys. One guy, his mother was an addict. The other one, his father was an addict. When they got out of jail, they had no place to go. You know, they couldn't go to their parents because they'd be back into the active lifestyle. So Connections to Recovery wanted to take somebody who was already kicked the habit and then connect them with the services they need. It might be how to get a GED, maybe a how to apply for a Habitat house, help them fill out applications for a job, where to go for additional counseling, different homes that might help addicts. So it tries to connect former addicts with services that will keep them sober. Currently, Connections is working with Bridges to Recovery. It's a residential organization for women who have been sentenced either by drug court or through their own desire to residential rehab. They have to be sober when they're going in. the home helps the women with accountability, job acquisition, Bible studies pertinent to this stage of their lives, supplies them with mentors, and so on. So that's really what Connections has done.
Very good. You've also mentored recovering addicts, I understand, personally, Carol. What would you say is the most difficult aspect of taking on that role, and what is the greatest reward for you in doing that kind of work?
The hard part, in all honesty, is the power of addiction. It's
yes.
Something my brain still can't understand. It really does not understand. About 40% of the people who go through programs end up succeeding. So you're really working with a lot of loss, a lot, you know, of hardship. I've seen people who really loved God, who'd been clean for a long time, fall back into addiction after they've regained the trust of their family and grandchildren or children and so on. So that's really the hard part, that losing them again. You know, it's Borrowed Lives, I believe. Actually, it's the sequel to it. A grandfather says the problem with addiction is your child dies to you over and over and over. And that's really the hard part because, I don't know, somebody had said you have to have 3 or 4 times at sobriety before it sticks, and it does seem to happen. But the best part is super easy, you know, to say. It's those who stay sober. And I've seen them get their children back. I've seen them get married, have children. One gal, she actually never had a felony. So she's a medical transcriber. So they move on to good jobs and good homes and good families. You know, when they succeed, that's the good part.
That's
and
the reward.
Very few succeed without Jesus.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. At this point, I just want to take a little break and remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with your hosts, Patty Sheen and Jean Alfieri. Today, our guest is Carol McLean, and Carol is actually an award-winning author. We haven't even talked about her books yet because she has so many other interests that were quite fascinating. She works with stained glass. She works with pottery. She has some interesting animals, especially goats. So if you'd like to listen to the show again, or if you would like to refer folks to the show, which we'd love to have you refer friends and family, go to my website, which is pattysheen.com, and there you will find a Blog Talk Radio tab. This show will appear on the homepage of the website for a few weeks, but after that, go to the Blog Talk Radio tab and you'll find instructions there how you can listen or even download any show that you would like to hear. Also, on that website, you will find under that Blog Talk Radio tab a more information button under each show, and there you click on that and you will find the link to Carol's website, which is where you can sign up for her newsletter and her blog. She also has some social media going on, as most people do today, and you'll find links to all of that there. Let's get back to our interview. Jean, I'm going to let you go ahead and take it from here.
Okay. So, Carol, on Step Into the Light, our guests share ways that they bring light to others, and they often share a time in their lives when they struggled and how they found their way back to light. Has there been a time like that for you, and how did you get through it and find your way back to the light?
There are. I had learned through ACFW and a course taught by Ann Mulligan that there are essentially, and I think she got the information, Amy, I wanted to say Wilson, and that may not be right, but there are essentially 8 common lies that people believe about themselves. And all of us fall into at least one. For some reason or other, I don't really know why, I have believed the lie that I wasn't good enough. And then the second lie that was closely aligned to it, that there was something intrinsically wrong with me. And I've been raised Catholic, and a part of me still loves the liturgy and the incense. Oh my gosh, I'm still a hippie, I think, you know. and there's a part that likes the symbolism and the gold embroidered vestments and all of that. But sometime around college, I decided Catholicism limited me, and I fell into worldliness and sin. So for about 8 years, I freestyled my life, and that was not pretty. It was 8 years that took me many more than 8 years to overcome. But the one thing during that time period that had happened is that God became to me as a total unbeliever living my life the way I wanted. I understood God to be what he really is, loving, forgiving, long-suffering. So, of course, he wouldn't throw me into hell for getting drunk or whatever it might have been because, hey, I was Carol and I was pretty cool. But then, like I said, it was about 8 or 10 years later, I became a Christian. And that step into Christianity, this will sound weird, God became Catholic because my mind had always equated my Catholicism as being like a born-again Christian. So once I became a Christian, God became Catholic, and he became much more punitive. And when I grew up, they had talked about purgatory, and the concept was that your sin is forgiven, but it's kind of like spilling chocolate on your clothes. You wash it and it's clean, but there's a stain, and you had to have that stain rubbed out. And so thus you went to purgatory for, I don't know, a gabillion years and worked out the stain. Okay? So with this concept in my mind, it took me years to overcome the guilt of things I'd done as a non-Christian. And when I met my husband, I told him, and this was after years and years of marriage, all the, and I'm air quoting, horrid things I'd done, you know, and none of them, nothing I ever did fazed him in the least. You know, it might as well have been said I hung out the wash or I lost my car keys. It was just like, if I lost my car keys, that would probably faze him because now it costs like $300 to replace them. None of them fazed him. Then with all my hidden feelings, all my hidden guilt, all my hidden shame, all those things I tried to cover up because people were going to despise me because of them, when they were exposed and I was still loved, that guilt disappeared. You know, he, in a way, traded to me the love of God. You know, and of course, anything that I did in my past didn't particularly affect him, you know, but I was able to let go of that burden. And so that now I really understand that not only are we forgiven, there are absolutely no stains to be scrubbed out. I'm totally accepted, essentially with out doing a thing, I'm accepted. I'm forgiven. And that is really great liberty, especially for a person who is a worker and has to work all the time to whatever. So,
yeah, that is a great reminder. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. For anybody really who is struggling, I think one of the best therapies is with someone you trust, to talk to them, tell them what you're struggling with, and you're liable to find that it's not what you think and that it doesn't faze other people, you know. It's let it out. Don't hide it.
Right.
I agree so much with that, Carol. I've probably mentioned this on the show before, but when I first started attending Christian writers' conferences, I was so careful about what I told people because I thought, oh my goodness, if anybody here knew that I used to actually go to the bar with my husband and have a few drinks and that I was a heavy smoker, and you know, they would just be shocked. And come to find out, when I got to know these people, a lot of them had lived experiences that I had never had, that, you know, and you come to learn, especially with Christian writers, that most of them are writing through their pain and through the experiences that they have had, you know. So now I'm pretty, what's the word, I guess I don't have that much of a problem explaining to people that, yeah, back in the day, my husband and I, we enjoyed going to a bar and having a good party every now and again. And I grew up with my folks, enjoyed a good party. And I've come to realize that, as a Christian, I mean, you have that forgiveness of Jesus, and that is so freeing and so wonderful. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you, and it feels like somehow you have to qualify yourself to belong to a group when you really don't.
You don't.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. No.
It's just freeing when you're able to forgive yourself. You're going to find that it's easier to forgive other people or to overlook other people's weirdness. You know, it's like sometimes people can just drive you absolutely crazy. But some years back, I came to the conclusion, like, I'd look at these people with weird ideas or silly lifestyles or whatever, and saw their heart, their love for God. And I said, okay, God loves them just the way they are. They're happy with their lives. That's fine. And I found I could accept people more as long as they were truly following God the way they needed to. There was no problem.
Carol, what motivated you to a writing career? I'm assuming that this is something that you picked up later in life. You didn't start writing as a young person, or did you? Were you the type
who
signed an essay in school you couldn't wait, or no, not so much?
Oh, no. And I am certainly not an outliner. When they assigned an essay at school and said, write the outline and then do the essay, I would write the essay and then write the outline on what I had already written. You know, but what I love most is words, the sounds of words, the rhythms of words. You know, I went through the poetry angst sort of thing. And when I did write the essays, I would add words just because it sounded nicer. You know, sometimes it was, you know, you could say, I want milk, eggs, and peanut butter. I might put, I want milk and eggs and peanut butter, because that "and" gave it a rhythm, like an iambic rhythm, and it just sounded so much better. But no, I was not one who was eager to write any essay whatsoever. The short answer to the story is I wanted to see if I could write a novel. It had always seemed like a daunting task. You know, you pick up a book and it's 300 pages long. How can a person write that? I was older than most novelists, and in my 40s, I taught AP English Language and Composition. And as I said earlier, I think my main gift is language. And so, you know, my kids were writing, and other students were writing stories and having me read them and all. I thought, let me see if I could write a whole novel. And out of this, it's a reissued book now, The Perils of Cheryl was born. You know, since that time, I've quit writing millions of times, probably, you know, still battling my intrinsic lies, but I always do come back to it. And as you spoke earlier, I never saw myself as a typical author born. And my mother having a difficult childbirth because I had that pencil clutched in my hand as I'm pushing my way out, you know. And I probably have a mild case of dyslexia, So even though in school I would practice forever my handwriting, it's atrocious and I don't like to handwrite. But as a child, I know as a child I tried writing one novel, and then all my friends started writing stories and they were just so lame I quit. So instead of writing, I invented stories in my head, and then I find my friends and I'd make them perform the story. We were always acting out stories. We'd create plays, force our parents to pay us a penny to come watch us perform. And, you know, and with the advent of the computer, I was at that point I was able to transcribe these dreamy things in my head onto the written page.
Very good.
And now, Carol, you're the author of 4 books to date. Tell us a little bit about your latest, Borrowed Lives.
Okay. Borrowed Lives was birthed from everything we've talked about so far. I heard tales that the readers would say, many readers would say, would never happen. Fathers teaching their sons how to make meth. Parents locking children out of the apartments until they sold their quota of drugs. One girl did not know her real name until she was 16 years old, and she only found out by accident that she wasn't Sweetie. You know, just really awful, awful things that had gone on. And then you add to that the emphasis on foster care. In our church, we have one family that I envy just for their gift and the foster care service. They've adopted two girls. One of their daughters adopted one of their foster kids who has spina bifida. Yeah, and so they are just, we have pictures of kids who are not typical for adoption hanging up in the lobby, and we take them down and pray for them. So the foster care system is always there, too. And I tried it once myself. I'm not called to it. I'm just not, although I'm not as bad as I make myself out to be myself because of my foster daughter. Oh, my gosh. She said to me one day, I hope when I have children, they have a foster mother as nice as you.
Oh,
that just broke my heart. So out of that, out of the tales I've heard from Celebrate to Recovery, from my mentoring, from friends and so on, I developed a story about a goat artist. This was before my husband let me have goats. And I'm weird. When I write, I basically become my characters. You know, sometimes I'll ask, well, what would so-and-so do? You know, when I'm trying to figure out what I should do. And so since he wouldn't let me have goats, I decided I would have a goat farmer. And so I'd have my goats through her. And she had faced unspeakable tragedy. Then she finds, several months later, she discovers 3 girls who seem to be abandoned by their parents. If she turns them over to DCS, they're going to be separated because there just is no place to put them. But she believes she's too broken to care for them. So out of this book grows a book of hope and love and family and healing. And no matter how hard I try, there's always humor. I mean, this sounds like a downer, but it's always humor. Perils of Cheryl is just laugh out loud. It's funny, you know, but there's always humor in all of this. So this, you know, this story tells the tales of people I know, but they're melted down and redesigned and soldered into the pages like the pieces of stained glass.
So it's inspired by true stories.
Yes, very
That's
much
lovely.
So.
And well, I love that you add the humor, because that's what makes life go round, right? If we don't laugh at it, we'll cry.
Yeah, yes. You have to laugh at it.
I had the pleasure, Carol, to read Borrowed Lives. And the novel does. It deals with the serious subjects of grief and loss and foster care and addiction of the parents and all this. But you just lace it with humor. And oh my goodness, yeah, there were scenes where I just laughed out loud. I could just picture picture this happening with these kids. So obviously you see humor as very important when tackling difficult subjects.
Yeah.
I think if there was no humor in a story like that, that it would be almost too much for a person to bear.
Yeah.
You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I had read a Pulitzer Prize winning book, and it made it into a major motion picture. About halfway through, all I wanted to do was slip my wrist. I have no idea why it won the Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm.
It was a depressing blow-by-blow look at the destruction of one man's spirit. It was really, yeah, you needed the humor.
Yeah, I struggle with books like that, too. I rarely start something that I don't finish because I just feel committed to it, right? After you're into the first paragraph, you might as well go. But I hit one a while back that was just so heartbreaking. I'm like, no, this isn't what I want to end my day with every day. I had to set it aside because to your description, it was just miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have some hope. And even if things don't work out the way you want it to work out, you know, in your own life, things don't, you have to come away with the takeaway, the, it's not really purpose, but the lesson that that gives that helps build who you are. And so that even in sorrow, it could have a happy ending.
Yeah, I agree. What would you say, Carol, is your main faith message in your novels?
It's redemption. It says no matter what, God can redeem our lives. He'll either take us out of our sin into his holy Catholic or universal church, or he'll take the tragedies of believers like Meredith James and Borrowed Lives and use them to burnish them into beauty. So my books, you know, just deal with the redemption of our broken lives.
Beautiful.
So, Carol, what is next in your writing future? Do you have another project in mind, as most writers do?
Yes, I have, I think, too many in mind right now. I had hoped to get book two of this. This is the first series I've written. Book two, Chronicle Lives, to my editor by May. So I'm hoping to get that in. It's almost done. It's just really coming to the climax. So that one should be into the publisher by May. Book three within a year, if I don't quit again. And then, well, I can't quit now because I have the contract for three.
Oh, yeah.
I am going to write a novella. This Treasured Lives series is through Elk Lake. And I am going to write a novella, love story kind of thing, which will be due at the end of next year. And then I have a nonfiction project in the works with another author. So
nice.
There's a lot. Yeah.
You're just
very
a little busy.
Oh, too busy. Really too busy. I want to go back and have a full-time job so I could have a life.
Goodness. Carol, this has been a pure delight. It's been so much fun talking with you. I think I knew just from my contact with you on email that you would be a lot of fun to interview and you would be informative, and you've just been great. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. I've enjoyed myself immensely.
Well, we're always so glad to hear that, that our guests enjoy spending time with us on the show. With that, ladies, I think we'll say goodbye. Jean, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Carol. This was such a delight. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Well, wonderful, Carol. And thank you so much for sharing with us and with our listeners. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter difficult times in our lives. We encourage you during those times to look to the light, knowing that when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Don't forget to go to Carol's website, which is carolmclain.com. There you can sign up for her newsletter and her blog. Also, she has some social media outlets, which I'm going to refer you to my website, which is pattysheen.com, P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E.com. Go to the Blog Talk Radio tab. There you will find links to her website and to her social media. Hope to have you with us next time. God bless.
There is a fandom in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings